Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of Oblique Outlook, where we get real about people of color in genre media. I'm Dee Dee, also known as Dust Daughter on Twitter.
And I'm Sean, also known as Master Dept on Tumblr.
Oh, yeah. On Tumblr, I am Dust, so you can look for me there on Tumblr. We have some housekeeping notes to do first before we get into the show. As always, we want to remind you of our spoiler policy. We kind of really don't have one, except for the fact that we spoil shit.
Yeah, and this episode's pretty spoilerific, so, you know, some people may not want to listen to this until after they catch up on certain shows.
Yeah, and those shows are Sleepy Hollow, American Horror Story Coven, maybe some Almost Human, although we're probably going to talk mostly about Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, I think we're going in on Sleepy Hollow and American Horror Story today. Yeah, I don't think, actually, was there a new episode of
Almost Human? There was one right before,
a 2-week break, so.
Yeah, but I've forgotten it, so.
Yeah, see? Oh, sorry.
So, that's the spoiler policy. We spoil. if you don't like it, you can contact us at a-bleak-outlook.tumblr.com, and that's bleak spelled B-L-E-E-K. On Facebook, we're facebook.com/bleakoutlook. On Twitter, we're at a-bleak-outlook. And on Gmail, we're bleakoutlookpodcast@gmail.com. And that's how you can get in contact with us and cuss us out for our spoiler policy, or tell us that you love us. Like Io, who told us on Tumblr, I love the podcast and can't wait for the next one. Yay! Well, thank you very much, Io. We hope you like this one. And all of the people that liked or reblogged the podcast post, we want to shout them out as well. The people that liked or reblogged our episode 4 post-hiatal bliss episode, still think that word's made up, but
it's not okay. Go look it up if you doubt me, go look it up.
Anyway, the people that passed on the post include Felicia Angel, Inquisitive Bibliophile, Io, Starberry Slash, Bitter Oreo, Fat Android, The Stout Torialist. I'm sorry, I messed up your name. Sorry. Angel Scream. We want to thank all of you for liking or reblogging the podcast post. And we hope you enjoy the show and keep passing it on. So now we get into our genre news and notes. So, this is going to be a big one. Marvel reveals that the character played by J. August Richards on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., character name is Michael Peterson, will be Deathlok. Deathlok in the Marvel Universe is a name that Marvel's used for a series of dudes who turned into cyborgs that have different origin stories that run the gamut from unstoppable government-controlled killing machines to a man struggling to control the homicidal computer intelligence within him. So what do you think about that turn of events, Sean?
Me, I'm cool with that, see, because I remember Deathlok back in the day. Also, they used the Deathloks in the short-lived Black Panther animated series. If you haven't seen it, everybody should see that. So I'm familiar with the Deathlok persona and the characters. And as an old Marvel head, yeah, I have no problem with that. And I forget who's mentioned it, but I should have probably seen it coming myself, because it is following down the path pretty closely, you know, especially since the last time we've seen, well, last time I saw Mike Peterson, because I don't even know if there was been a new episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But yeah, you know, lost a leg, got a, you know, got the controlled chip eye thing going on, and yeah. So I think it will turn out to be pretty interesting because, well, you know, it could be interesting, I should say. That is, of course, will it get me interested enough to go back to watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is another question in its entirety.
Okay, just tell me, how many times does Deathlok die?
I don't remember.
Is it a lot?
I don't remember. I seriously don't remember.
See, I need to know this.
Yeah, I know. And the other thing is, still depends on which Deathlok we're talking about. Because like I said, they used the Deathlok idea in the Black Panther anime series, but it wasn't one. It literally was a cadre of zombie cyborgs. And that's really what they look like. They look like zombie cyborgs. And the U.S. government had sent them to send into Wakanda. It was a clusterfuck of events because if you really should see the Black Panther TV show, because as a person of color, as a black person, there's a lot of little interesting tidbits, and it's very true to the idea that, you know, white supremacy is, you know, the U.S. government, and there's some real, you know, moments in it. So they're sending zombie cyborgs to Wakanda because Wakanda's being attacked by some racist mercenary crew with superpowers, and one of which is, of course, somebody who's an enemy of the Black Panther.
What, Claw?
Well, there you go.
I'm trying to remember the series. Yeah,
it's the Black Panther series. So the Black Panther animated series did stay true to the mythos of Black Panther a lot more closely than a lot of other shows. So yes, and yeah, so they look really gross on the cartoon, which was kind of cool because they were truly zombie cyborgs. Whereas Mike Peterson is not a zombie cyborg and probably will not be. He'll just be a bit scarred up. And, you know, the controlled eye thing from was a centipede, and one leg will probably be robotic. So.
So he's John Kennex almost.
Yeah. Except for Kennex doesn't. Yeah. It's more except like the $6 million, kind of like the $6 million man. Cause you remember, well, no, the $6 million man had both legs. Was it Divine Woman who had one? I can't remember how the different ones worked. It's been so long.
I need to know how many times he dies so I can be prepared. If I'm gonna watch,
I don't think they're gonna pull a Rory on us. I think the one fake death was enough. I don't get the feeling that it's gonna be a Rory situation. You know, I don't think he's gonna be constantly the man who dies.
All right now.
Okay. I mean, they got better things to worry about with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now that Coulson knows the truth. So yeah.
All right, if I start watching the show and he dies again, it's on
time. Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I can't guarantee because I don't have any idea what's going on with the writers. And I'm more likely to watch it before you, so I could warn you anyway.
That's what I'm saying.
So there's that. You know, I'll take the hit. I haven't seen a new episode in a while, so we'll see. Last episode I saw was Seeds, and we'll see if there's a new one after that. And I haven't seen a new one, so they may be on a few-week break. Like, everything seems to be on a few-week break right now, which is weird.
Yeah. John Boyega, who was the star of Attack the Block, which is an awesome sci-fi movie from a few years ago, he's going to be a part of the event series called 24 Live Another Day. Now, this is supposed to be a 12-episode series that starts May 5th on Fox, and it's another chapter in the 24 series that stars Kiefer Sutherland. So he's going to be a part of the cast. Stephen Fry is going to play the British Prime Minister. So I guess there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff set in Britain, if it's going to include Fry and Boyega. So there's going to be a couple of old 24 cast members coming along for the ride, including Kiefer and the lady that played the computer tech that I can't say her last name very well, Marilyn Radscoob, whatever. And Yvonne Strahovski from Chuck is going to be on the show as well. So this is going to be, it should be interesting. It'll give us something to talk about, I guess.
Is it John Strahovski? Was that the romantic lead for Check the...
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Oh, see, I'm more used to her being Miranda in the Mass Effect series.
So...
And I'm not a 24 fan, but I may watch it just because of, well, I admit, yeah, Moses.
He was awesome. Okay, so that's good news. Another bit of casting news is that Jesse L. Martin has been cast to play Detective West in the new Flash TV show. So before people get up in arms, I mean, it was funny. If you read this blog post that I'm getting this news from, half the blog post was trying to calm down all the people who might get upset that, oh my gosh, they're going to make Wally West black.
Oh, God forbid they make Wally West black.
But anyway,
oh, no.
Exactly. But everybody knows that this series is going to be about Barry Allen. So we may never see Wally West.
See, just and that makes see me his sad.
His dad or possibly his stepdad, whatever.
Well, see, the fact is that, you know, I mean, you know, Barry Allen being the center, but we already know now that a Detective West will be Jesse L. Martin, which may lead to him being, you know, the sidekick, which would be kind of interesting. With, I'm stroking my chin right now thinking about this. This could be good. This could be very good.
Anyway, it's sad that the show hasn't even started, and we're trying to calm down possible race wars within the fandom.
Let's be honest, okay? It's one thing I've learned in the last few years that it does not matter what show it is. Once you start changing up things or, I don't know, God forbid, actually making prominent characters people of color, the racists show up. And the inner racism comes out of people. And the not-so-subtle racism comes out. So, deal with it. Cheers.
Yeah.
Salute. Whatever.
So I guess, you know, maybe we'll, that'll give us something to cover as our other favorite shows go on hiatus, and we will start covering Arrow and Flash and this new 24 series, among other things. So, well, you know, at least that's good. Jesse L. Martin's getting checks, and John Boyega's going to get some checks. This is all good. All to the good. Speaking of getting checks, Gal Gadot is going to get some big, big checks because she just signed a 3-picture deal with Warner Brothers to play Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I'm actually all for that. I'm for that because I would like to see a Wonder Woman movie, although I'm still hesitant because in reading other people's things about how they'll do how a Wonder Woman movie could be done or how people fear a Wonder Woman movie will be done. It's more the second one to fear how it will be done. It's going to pander to, you know, the male audience, and I feel that takes away from it. So I just pray that they go with a good story, a good plot, and good writers. And I actually would prefer some women writers instead of some male. Even I would prefer a woman director, technically, too.
Yeah, I swear, if somebody doesn't come to Gail Simone's house with a damn truckload of money and just lock her down to a contract, I will have a freaking fit.
Actually, I wish they would go with Gail Simone, because Gail Simone's treatment of the Wonder Woman anime movie was really good. I mean, that's one of my favorite of the DC anime movies.
And I loved her run of Wonder Woman.
And, you know, her run on Birds of Prey? Come on, Gail Simone, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's an obvious thing. Just make it happen. Just leave Joss alone and just go to Gail's house. Go to Gail's house.
I pray to Joss. Well, Joss is all on Avengers, so he's not going to be part. He's not part of Justice League anyway. So he's not doing anything involved with DC right now.
Good.
The other problem I have, and this is just with DC's movies live action right now, is the problem is that, I mean, seriously, we're not looking at Batman Superman until probably, what, 2016, or is it now?
Wow, really?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, it's like 2 years, so, you know. So, who knows how long until we see a Wonder Woman movie, which...
Yeah.
I pray that what I hope they do is that they do some, back-to-back filming, and that would be good.
thing is that the three movie deal includes the Batman Superman movie, Justice League, and then one standalone Wonder Woman. What
Well,
if that doesn't keep make any room give any room for possible sequels of
see,
a
the other
Wonder
thing
Woman
is
movie?
that means they're hedging their bets too. They are hedging their bets right now because it's only three. Unlike, say, Samuel L. Jackson's Marvel deal, which was nine films on top of certain guest appearances, which they worked in, which I don't think anybody really picked that up, which we know what the guest appearances are now for, which is things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But yeah, they're hedging their bets on this. And unfortunately, that I would say is, one of the problems with DC and the whole thing is Wonder Woman is hard to write for,
Oh,
their.
don't give me that now.
Yeah, no, that's, remember they said that Wonder Woman's hard to write for. People don't understand her story, which I call total BS on. I mean, I've been understanding Wonder Woman's story since I was like 4 years old, okay? So,
We've had
and,
so
I remind,
many.
and once again, I remind people in DC that, I am a, well, I would say I'm a man. So if I can understand Wonder Woman's story, I'm pretty sure the rest of us can.
If we can understand all the different permutations of Batman's origin story that we've gotten over the years and
Oh,
Superman's origin story, we can damn sure write a damn Wonder Man. I'm about to start cussing. Anyway,
no.
so I just it just why sign a woman to play Wonder Woman in a three-picture deal where there's only one Wonder Woman movie included?
And the Wonder
There's
Woman movie
some
is not even the first one.
exactly. There's
You're
some
wanting, I
fuckery
mean,
here.
yeah, there's some serious fuckery. You guys aren't doing what what is this, Break Your Way? You've done Batman's origin. Well, you have Batman origins from the Nolan stuff, so fine. And you got Superman's origins. Neither one of them need another origin story. We
No.
all know their origin story. We've seen their origin movies. Their origin movies have been done to death. And this is a conversation we have in the house actually about, they don't need to redo origin stories for superhero movies. Frankly, superhero origins are part of our mythos. They are our current run of myths, I think I would love somebody to actually take a poll and see how many people know Superman's origins without, everybody knows. Krypton blew up. Superman saved.
Sent
How did
down to
he save?
Smallville.
Exactly. Grew up on Earth. Ma and Pa Kent.
So, there's that. But congratulations to Gal Gadot, and hopefully we'll see a Wonder Woman movie and several sequels in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Fingers
I'm actually
crossed.
hoping, to also go with, when they start casting for Hippolyta, Lucy Lawless people. Lucy Lawless.
Regina Torres. Yes.
I want Gina Torres to be an Amazon. I want her to be like, one of the badass Amazons. Like, yeah. But yeah. I would love for her to be Hippolyta, but I don't see them doing that. You know how they are. Especially if,
I just need her to be involved in this
she needs to be
movie
involved. She
in a
needs to be involved.
big way, in a
I would
big
even
way.
love, I would even say I would take her as a villain.
No, she's played it. She's played a lot of
I know,
villains.
I know. I mean, one of my favorite roles was Anna Espinosa from Alias, so that's
Don't get started, because we'll have to pause
Yeah,
this podcast
we're
for a
gonna
minute.
have a we're gonna have to have a Gina Torres moment one of these. Okay?
Whew, Lord have mercy. It just got hot in here. Oh my dear. We
Don't
got
even
to move
start
on.
singing Ellie.
We gotta move on. Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
So
I'm
Jesse
good.
Eisenberg was cast as Lex Luthor and Jeremy Irons as Alfred in the upcoming Batman Superman movie, which I'm all for Jeremy Irons because actually I like Jeremy Irons also. There's a salt and pepper beard and his very English demeanor. But Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, really?
I'm not. So how old are Batman and Superman supposed to be in
No,
this
no,
thing?
I'm not worried about the age factor. I'm worried about I mean, I can Jesse Eisenberg, I'm okay with. I'm okay with. I mean, he's okay. Zombieland was cool and The Social Network, I actually like The Social Network. And Jesse Eisenberg's not bad, but I just don't see him as being Lex Luthor. There's a certain suave sophistication. Lex is just Lex is canonically just the in some ways, he's the smoothest badass villain, you know. Mr. Squeaky Clean, you know he's dirty as, you know, shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's that, and Lex is one of those villains, I will say Lex is a villain that I can identify with because I understand his mentality of things like, you know, protect humanity, you know, Earth is in danger, I want the, you know, I'm the most intelligent man in the room, I want more intelligence. I can outthink anybody here, why am I dealing with these plebes kind of thing. I may not be that person, but I understand that because I've dealt with people like that. But also, you know, there's just the idea of Jesse Eisenberg playing Lex, and I just can't see it. Also, you know, and I never really thought about this until somebody mentioned it, a lot of people grew up on the Justice League cartoon, and there are some people who actually thought Lex was man of color because of the Justice League cartoon, which I would say, you know, hey, I have no problem with that. Because it's one of the few times where I would say a man of color being a villain probably would work well. Because he was just smoother than everybody else. He was smarter. He stayed ahead of the curve. I mean, this is the man who pretty much went to jail, came out of jail, and became president of the damn United States. Had Amanda Waller as his Secretary of Defense.
Lord.
Okay, come on. If the Wallers got your back, although in the end she had to turn on him and take him out, which is fine. I mean, but Jesse Eisenberg is playing him.
I just don't see how that's going to work, but hey, keep getting them checks, Jesse.
I mean, you know, we got Ben Affleck playing Batman, and now we have Jesse Eisenberg playing Luther.
And I'm not going to see this movie anyway, whatever. I'll wait for the Wonder Woman gifts to come on Tumblr, and I'll be good. So, go ahead and talk about the next one.
Oh, yes. I don't know if anybody noticed this. Well, I'm pretty sure people did. Studio Ghibli announced its first ever TV series called Ronya the Robber's Daughter, which is based off of an old Icelandic story. I don't know for sure. I have to go look it up. I was doing research last night really late. So, but, I mean, it's the first ever Ghibli series, and you know, I don't know if anybody heard that, you know, kind of scream and faint of, you know, anime fandom. But yeah, that's where it was from. A Ghibli series is, you know, come on. We all love Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki's work. And, you know, I kind of can't wait to see it. So I don't know about you, Didi. I don't know if you're into anime. So maybe you need to start
giving you an anime corner. Anime corner of the podcast.
It could be interesting.
Okay.
Not that much. Maybe a little anime slide here and there. Yeah.
Right. So, one thing that will not be announced, that won't be starting, is the Murder, She Wrote remake that was supposed to star Octavia Spencer. Unfortunately, it's been put on hold, so who knows if it'll ever happen or not. Which sucks, because that might have been cute. It would have been cute to have Octavia Spencer play Jessica Fletcher.
Yeah. So, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Octavia Spencer more on the TV.
Yeah, that would have been cool. So, well, who knows? Maybe it'll resurface soon, hopefully for her, you know, so she can get another check. So it's all about checks.
It's all about making sure the actors and actresses are going
to get them checks. Keep eating.
Remind me of Dave Chappelle and that. We black actors got to stick together. We black actors got to stick together.
What else did he say? He's got his fuck you farm that he bought with his fuck you money.
Okay.
So, you know, if he falls out of favor with the mainstream, he can go back to his farm and say fuck you. So,
what if he did that after Connecticut, after his whole incident in Connecticut? That's probably where he went.
Yeah. You know, I'm all for these folks getting checks, you know, like Jesse and John Boyega and Octavia Spencer, so they can set up their fucky money fund. Mm-hmm. I wish we all could.
Yeah.
So.
Like Selma Hayek and Lucy Liu did, and do production companies and the Smiths. Come on, seriously.
Yeah, so. On to our TV
Ah, here
review.
comes the beat of the podcast.
Basically, so spoilers, 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 spoilers for Sleepy Hollow, spoilers for American Horror Story. First of all, Sleepy Hollow had a 2-hour season finale.
Which was bogus because it really was just two episodes slammed into one.
Pretty much, not even slammed into one. It was just two of them back to back.
Yeah. It was weak. That was weak the way they pulled it. It's like I expected really 2 hours of, oh yeah, no, obviously one episode, two episodes.
Yeah. So the first one was called Indispensable Man, and it kind of set up the second episode. Gonna get a couple of shallow moments out of the way. Abby was fine. She looked so good in these episodes. Good
When
God.
is Abby not fine though? Come on, seriously,
I'm sorry, but it was like it was distracting because she was wearing this tight little top,
can
these tight these tight jeans, like painted on, and I was God. Ooh.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was nice to see actually Abby in downtime, texting,
Yeah.
Yeah, Ichabod.
And she
It was
signed off
hilarious.
her she signed off her voicemail, Lieutenant Mills. I'm like,
Yeah.
okay, she's
I
get
thought that
he's
was cute.
getting to her. He's
Yeah,
getting to her a
that
little
was cute.
bit. So, and then Abby, I mean Andy Brooks shows up at in her darn kitchen. I'm like,
Yeah, that was very much a how do I put this? I mean, when I saw it, I was like, what is this damn Charmed and Buff? Well, no, Charmed because Buffy the vampires would never show up in the house.
goodness. I mean, yeah, he was trying it there. And she said, we got to talk about boundaries because she had that big kitchen knife in his hand. And it was like, if he wasn't
Well,
already dead, he would have been.
I appreciate the fact that she pretty much was like, chopping along and her and like, I'm just gonna keep on chopping for a second, turn around with my knife.
Yeah, she's like, something's up here, but.
As a person who pretty much, sometimes when I'm in the kitchen, I'm doing stuff, I zone out, and if I have a knife and somebody comes up behind me, I kind of jump, and I usually kind of turn around with knife. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, he tried it. He tried it that right then. He, see, that's dead privilege right there.
Boundaries.
That's dead privilege, 'cause he knew she couldn't do anything to him. But so I don't know what his deal is. He keeps coming by to try to warn her about stuff, but then
Used to.
he keeps working against
Well,
her.
I don't think he has any control. I think in those moments where he has control, when Moloch or whatever at this point, because I really question what the big bad is not paying attention to him or using him or controlling him, he can have his free will to some degree. And his free will doesn't exactly hurt Moloch's schemes or whoever the big bad is at this point. Because, like I said, I question who the big bad is now.
Because I feel like he could have warned her about the Sin Eater, about Jeremy Crane, about who Henry Parrish really was. But
That's next episode, but let's worry about that till
yeah,
later.
anyway.
Disapproving tone, as you can tell.
Yeah, what really sucked about this episode was Irving going to jail. Yeah, because what I think the priest got died in the
Yeah,
last step,
yeah.
and the
When I
blind
saw,
cop.
and well, I mean, the blonde cop died by not Andy, Luke's hands, technically. I don't know what they're gonna say. I mean, how do you explain somebody's back being broken over like that? That's some not, come on.
Well, Irving tried to tell them it was evil, but they weren't trying to hear that, so
Well, you
he's like, let
know.
me just go take my black behind the jail.
Which is not, well, let's see. I understand. I totally understand taking a hit because one, it's his daughter. Macy's fingerprints would probably be on the priest's neck because that was a full-on twist. And she was possessed at the time. So, still. Yeah, that episode still freaks me out in some ways because, like everybody, Fallen really did put a number on me from, So, but Irvin taking a hit like that.
That sucks. And you slowly see, like in both of these episodes, everybody being put in their own corners and mm-hmm. kind of taken out of play for when the real action goes down. And that sucks because, you know, it's this whole divide and conquer thing and everybody's being divided.
Well, but standard operating procedure.
Yeah. I just hate it. This, I mean, this is a monster of a cliffhanger, and
yeah.
you got months and months of...
It was a good build-up for the season finale, I will admit that. But, yeah, you know. Now, you know, yeah, Irving's out of play now.
And now we have months and months to figure out how the hell everybody's going to get back together. But... Everybody knew Ichabod was going to redraw that map. So
yeah.
why did he front and try to burn it in front of everybody?
Okay.
Everybody
knew. Seriously, how many people did not know that he was just going to do that? I mean, I knew it. I knew it the second he burned. I'm like, you got a dick memory, dude. You're just going to redraw that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even. I was sitting up here like, I mean, literally, I'm in the same pose. Hand on chin, looking at the screen going, no. Why are you going with the obvious play? No. I know you can redraw this. You're going to fuck. I was like, you're going to fuck some shit up, Ichabod.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
what
I had to be made true on that case.
And he was trying his darndest to get Abby to not believe in that prophecy. And there he goes fulfilling it. And, you know, you deserve everything you get, Ichabod. He messed it all up for everybody.
Uh-huh.
But... So that was the first episode, and then the next episode was the real finale was called Bad Blood.
Yeah.
And once you get to the end of the episode, you realize why it was called Bad Blood.
Oh, yes.
My favorite part of this episode was Jenny and Abby's conversation, when Jenny sort of pulls Abby to the side after talking with Ichabod in... Henry Parrish, and she's like, you're really going to go down to purgatory and get his wife? You really going to do this? And she's and Abby's talking all this stuff about not hiding anymore and trying to fight this guy and blah 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 Buffy cakes. And I'm like,
Buffy
and Jenny
cakes?
Jenny's it's just that it's the same sort of impulsive go get it go in and fight kind of stuff that you would always see Buffy do.
Well, I expected so, from Buffy, you know, Slayer and all, but anyway, and it was her job. But yeah, I didn't expect it from Abby. I didn't. In some ways I did, in some ways I didn't. Abby can sometimes be that, but
yeah, that's what
deep calming cleansing voice.
Yeah.
Breath, sorry. It's
Jenny
like, no.
was not trying to hear it. She's like, I just found you again. I'm not trying to lose you again. She's like, you're not back by sunset. I will come out and
hunt you. Uh-huh.
And then we know what happened to Jenny at the end of the episode. So another piece is taken out of play.
Yes.
And
all of the knights are out of the game right now.
I'm not liking this. But
and even the queen is out of the game right now, too.
So
anyway,
um,
or maybe not. I don't think the queen's off the board technically.
And so, who's the queen?
Abby.
Yeah.
Who else is the queen of that show?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I would say Ichabod was the king, but right now, you know, I have
man, he ain't.
I have some distaste for Ichabod right now. I mean, you know,
he's second in the ancient line with behind John Kenix right now.
Oh,
he's getting on my nerves.
See, unfortunately, after watching the episode, I was a bit upset because I was like, not upset, I was pissed, okay? Because,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pretty sure anybody who follows my Tumblr would know I was running around every time I saw some reblog with, you know, Mr. We're in this together and I burned the map, but then I'm going to redraw it. I was like, yeah, you don't leave your ride or die in purgatory just to get your faint spelling witch wife out. There's no excuses for it. I don't care if your ride or die says, I'm a stay, you take your wife. No, you counteract and go, no. No.
And especially when she can fill out a pair of jeans like Abby can't. Anyway, so we've got Irving. Let me get back on topic, Lord Jesus.
Yeah,
Irving's out of play. Jenny's out of play.
Well, Jenny did all the research while they were running into purgatory and figured out, you know, who yeah. certain people were.
Yeah.
Which then led to her being taken out of play. Which...
Then could Ichabod and Abby go in to purgatory and we witness the biggest fuckery of the episode.
Come on, but tell me that part where Abby wakes up, the apple pie. Come on, that wasn't like one of those heart. I think that was one of the best heart tugging moments in this season.
It was sweet. It was sad that you could see, you know, that was what she wanted her life to be like, going to Quantico, being top of her class, you know, still having Corbin and, you know, Andy and her support system around.
Everything just being nice and normal.
Yeah. I mean, that's the life that she could have had and gave it up to be with this.
What her destiny may be, let's be honest, because, you know, I don't know, headless horseman running around, you know, death persona, death incarnate, you know. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
but anyway, so
Ichabod's dream though was Ichabod's dreams was not, yeah, I mean, although I have to, Victor Garber as his father was a good choice. I love that actor. I love him so much. I do. You know, come on, another Alias alum. And, you know, the father from the, you know, as we call it, the one true Cinderella movie with Brandy and, you know, Whitney and Whoopi. So
I can't imagine that he'll only be in this one episode. I suppose they're gonna bring him back in some capacity next season.
Yeah, but we'll talk about next season after we finish this, because I've been seeing some stuff floating around. So,
but anyway, the biggest fuckery of this episode was Abby volunteering to stay in purgatory, like she wasn't witness one and needed to be out in the world to fight the horsemen. Like, she wasn't important at all. Like, she was less important than Katrina. That was the biggest fuckery of this entire episode of this entire series.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's like, you guys, okay, seriously, one, I don't know, there has to be other witches. I mean, there has to be other witches, seriously. You could have found another witch. How much you trust them or not, maybe you'd question. But you could have found another witch. And like I said, you don't leave your ride or die in purgatory. So, no.
Who's gonna, like, once they get out of wherever they are, so who's gonna ride them home? They left their...
I don't think that John Parrish was waiting for them, remember? So,
yeah, I'm just saying, once they get out of the places that...
Stuff like that, and, you know, he could be there. And Jenny was out there, too. I mean, there's other... I mean, that was not a fault in logic on that. There are other people out there. I mean, you know, so that wasn't a fault in logic. But a fault in logic was leaving your ride or die, who was the first witness in friggin' purgatory, and fulfilling a prophecy that Moloch said you would do. On top of that... What's up with the friggin', you know, pendant that Katrina gave her? Because we both know that didn't work so well.
I mean, it got rid of him for a moment. I don't know if it's...
Had to press into his skin and left it, and it ran, which was okay. And then, you know, of course, I mean, I guess I'm seeing fault here in I'm going to be honest. I see fault here in the writing. You know, they're holes. They're holes big enough for my fat ass to fall in into purgatory. And maybe help me get that.
This show has always been it's at its own internal logic that didn't resemble Earth logic. So
there's a certain, you know, amount of, you know, leeway we give on shows, you know. Especially shows that aren't dealing, you know. There aren't, yeah. But still.
But that was the biggest, that was the worst part of the episode for me, and I was probably mad for the rest of the series, like for the rest of the show. Like, once Ichabod and Katrina got back from purgatory and introduced themselves to Parrish, and Parrish then revealed who he really was. I didn't care. I was like, y'all deserve it. Y'all, this family fuckery is yours. Own it. I just don't want to see it on my TV anymore. Like, if we can, we really, need to be done with this crane fuckery, but we're not.
DeeDee is done with the crane fuckery, people.
But
done with the crane fuckery.
I wish, but the show is not done because they have upgraded John Noble to a series regular.
I know.
So we're going to get more of it.
He'll be the big bad for next season, and that's fine. He's also, what was the next one? He's War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeremy Crane. He's War, the next horseman. He's the Sin Eater. He got his name from the sign of a church. He engineered this whole memory thing where Jenny and Abby lost their memory. So they wouldn't see that he had been
How would they know him? Well, okay. They wouldn't know who he was exactly, just know that that Ichabod's kid would have been pulled out of the earth. But that's another thing. That's another aspect that did you realize that, okay. Now, I would say, who the hell sends children out to deal with, a demon? That's even worse than SBN in certain respects. Worse than Supernatural in some respects, but still. But in turn, it seems that Abby and Jenny were too powerful in certain aspects, because whatever they did required Moloch to pull their memories out of them and leave them in purgatory. And somebody was, somebody was telling me the other night that there's some theorizing that together Jenny and Abby are powerful. And that's one of the reasons why they were separated, and why it's always been, when the demon possessed Jenny, pretty much saying that she was going to kill Abby, is to keep them apart, because together they are very powerful. And who knows what's going to happen next season with that. But also the whole thing with their memories in purgatory created a safe haven. So maybe the sisters, well, we all knew the sisters were the key to a lot of this. They are. I think it's the sisters who are the witness, and Ichabod's just the tag along.
Yeah, a lot of people do. So,
unfortunately, I think the writers, and I forget which writer it is now, that's pretty much kind of forcing the Katrina Ichabod thing down our throats, and I'm really not liking that, is trying to change some of that, because he realizes that, nobody really cares about Katrina. None of us are here for Katrina. And the people who are here for Katrina, have fun with that, but whatever. I would say 99% of this fandom is here for Abby. Okay, maybe not, because I've seen some Abby dissension. And, I think the focus should be the sisters. Because, frankly, there's two witnesses, and that's them. And I don't know how Ichabod ended up being the witness, other than, you like English guys, and, they don't look really good in skinny jeans.
I'm just sick of this whole Crane family drama, and I want it to end as soon as possible, and I want Abby to be the one to do it. But first they need to get her lovely self out of purgatory.
Oh, no.
So I think Jenny... I mean, there's theories floating around that Jenny might be in a coma. She might not be dead, but she might be in a coma, which would be in that, put her in the right state to maybe descend into purgatory.
Uh-huh.
So,
I'm of opinion that it's not going to be Ichabod, and Ichabod's not going to rescue Abby. Abby and Jenny are going to end up pulling Abby out of purgatory somehow. And
Jenny is going to cuss the living hell out of it, and I am here for
it. I think it was Source and I were talking the other night, and Source was one who was like, the whole aspect of the purgatory thing is that it's about forgiveness, and one of the reasons that Abby may be stuck in purgatory is because her and her sister need to forgive each other, and that may be what happens in the safe haven, and then their younger selves and them, kind of remerge with each other, with themselves, and that's how she ends up getting out, which would be really smart and good. And maybe they'll unlock certain things. Like, I don't know. Maybe Abby and Jenny both have a power, and we cannot deal with any more of the weak, faint spell casting. Oh my god, my powers aren't what they used to be all the time in Purgatory. Katrina could go away. I'm not saying I hate on Katrina, but honestly, I cannot deal with. I don't hate on Katrina. I can't deal with no fate. I can't deal with weak. Sorry, I am very much against. No, no. Me and witches right now. No. Weak witches, you know, weak witches, and it's bad. It's bad.
Coven is broken.
Just,
you.
It's not just Coven, but anyway.
But
Gina has not helped it at all. And you know, and faint bending from Korra from season before. Anyway,
Parrish revealed himself as Jeremy Crane, the Horseman, bloody blah. Just in 30 seconds after getting out of Purgatory, Katrina's back with headless. He just tosses his mom off back to headless.
She can't get a break though. She can't get a break.
Stayed rescued.
No.
they just do that character wrong, but some people love her. So so that's Abby out of play. That's Jenny out of play. That's Irving out of play. That's Katrina out of play. Ichabod in the box. Who's going to rescue who? I think it's up to Jenny. It's going to be up to Jenny to start the dominoes falling. She's going to have to go back to Purgatory, bust Abby out, and then Abby and Jenny are just going to have to get everybody else.
Well, yeah. If Jenny's out of a coma when Abby comes out of Purgatory, I mean, if Jenny's in a coma, but she's now a regular, so yeah, she should be out of coma by then. And that's great, because I like to see more Jenny. I like to see more Jenny. I like to see more Abby. I like to see more of, you know, the Mill sisters being badasses, because...
That's a show in itself. That needs to be this show. And that Crane family drama for your mama.
I'm actually going to start looking for Mill Sister fanfic, because I want to see some badass Mill Sisters rocking some guns, kicking some ass, taking some names.
Chewing some bubble gum.
Seriously? Eating some apple pie a la mode.
All of that good stuff.
Talking about Corbin. Because, you know, they both have different takes on Corbin. Corbin, I mean, I would definitely say Corbin was the father figure to both of them, but in different aspects. Like with Jenny, he probably, you know, come on, he trained Jenny. I'm pretty sure that he helped in training Jenny. And that reminds me, that's very much of that, you know, Linda Hamilton from Terminator. You know, warrior women always get me. I have a big weak spot in my heart for warrior women. It's that Wonder Woman thing. So, yeah. And, you know, Abby also, Warrior Woman, but also very much, you know, the detective. Batman and Wonder Woman. Sisters. Oh, my God.
I need my show back. I miss my show. I'm going to miss my show all these darn months. Come back show. I think they're going to start filming for Series 2 around March. So... Good. Maybe we'll get some spoilers or some, you know, little hints and stuff from filming during the coming months, but it won't be the same.
I know.
I want my show back. But even though it made me mad. So speaking of witches.
Oh.
Have at it, Sean.
Oh. Okay.
I'm gonna just sit here in the corner and drink my water.
Sip. Okay. I know a lot of y'all remember my rant a few podcasts back about American Horror Story, where I kind of lost my stuff. And I'm not apologizing for that at all. Nobody said anything bad, because I think everybody understands where that came from, especially with that episode. And if you don't, well, whatever. Your ignorance is bliss, and enjoy that ignorance. But now that we've come to the end, and I am not seeing end of the road, because I'm not upset that this show is over, or at least this season's over. So, Sean's final wrap-up on Coven. I was disappointed. I was extremely disappointed at times. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, the black man in me, the person of color in me. It was just kind of an overall thing, you know? Shock and Awe is great if you are trying to do, I don't know, you're trying to, you know, blitz a town in the middle of war. But honestly, shock and awe doesn't do much for me when it comes to shows. And that's what Ryan Murphy seems to like to do, is shock and awe, you know. And it was a little overdone for me. I expected, or I should say, I wanted a show that centered around women and, you know, witches. And maybe I have high expectations when it comes to this, you know, field, because, well, you know, I read a lot. I've read a lot. And I have, you know, yeah, like Queenie, I grew up on, you know, Charmed and stuff like that. So, yeah. I liked certain things. And mostly with certain characters, you know, Marie Laveau. Angela Bassett can do no wrong. Even in this case, I don't blame Angela for this, because I really think Angela brought something to the role for Marie Laveau. And besides, you know, just being the goddess that she is. And who cannot like Angela in the way she talks? I mean, come on. I could just listen to Angel talk. I mean, seriously. But, yeah. You know. And I'm pretty sure a number of POCs identified with her character. I know all. I don't think I know a black person didn't identify with her character. And the fact is that her actions were warranted in our book because, you know, this is a woman who was born in 1794, if you go with the, you know, truth of Marie Laveau. And pretty much she lived through a lot of things in her 220 years. I mean, she saw slavery, Jim Crow. You know, she got to see, you know, what a lot of us call modern slavery, which is the modern prison complex. And who knows what other things. I mean, the show only highlighted certain things, you know. So I think we as black people can understand her actions and her anger, her motivation. Frankly, I think the only thing she did wrong was she didn't pull a Connor on Delphine LaMarie, and she should have buried her in a steel box in the ocean. Because, you know, seriously, what Connor did to Angel was probably one of the smartest things that you ever do to something that's immortal. Metal box, weld shut, drop in the ocean, walk away. Matter of fact, don't even know where you drop it. That was one Connor's fault right there, as he knew, somebody knew where it was. Queenie, and this is the second reason I actually watched the show, was Gabby Sidibe. And as much as a lot of people didn't like her powers as the human voodoo doll, I actually thought it was very freaking useful. I thought it was a pretty nice twist. Granted, she had that, you know, not that Wolverine healing factor, but the fact that she would be unhurt by, you know, doing the actions to herself and for trance, the actions being done to the person instead, so it was cool. I did like how powerful she became in the show, but one of the faults of the show is that, if you notice, all the witches became very powerful very fast, or maybe not very fast, depending on how time really worked the show, because time in American Horror Stories is weird. You can't tell if it's been a day or if it's been a week. So, but by the end of the show, she was pretty powerful, and I also think that headcanon-wise that, you know, her time with Marie taught her a lot more, being the one crossover witch to voodoo character that she's probably ever gotten. So, and I like the idea that maybe she's the bridge between witches and the modern voodoo practitioners to make a lasting peace in New Orleans, because that would make sense after all the stuff that happened. Because who knows? You know, the witch hunters may be dead for now, but they'll come back, because they always do. Myrtle Snow. And this was a surprise to me, because honestly, I'm not always the one for the snarky character, but I love Frances Conroy. And in season one of American Horror Story, I really loved her character. So, but her snark as Myrtle was awesome. I mean, random moments of talking about art and high fashion designers, just... Also, when she had a line when Zoe and Kyle returned, after she pretty much gave them an out of the horror that was pretty much going to be rained down on them if Madison was ever named, you know, the Supreme. Because Madison, let's be honest, Madison was not a nice person. Not a nice person at all. She was definitely of the Fiona line of thought, you know. I'm powerful. I can do what I want. You know, sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Sounds like, white folk. Sorry, white folk, if you're listening, but yeah, some of y'all get like that. Some of y'all really take it to the, you know, to the line and over. But yeah, but you know, that line is just like Halston when he sold his brand to JCPenney. You're forsaking your destiny. I nearly fell on my chair cracking up with that. And concerned she was Fiona's nemesis. I mean, come on, she was awesome. And that red hair, I mean, seriously. But I mean, how many other snarky witches do you know go into the fire, get resurrected, come back, and then at the end of everything, because they've broken the rules, they choose to go back in the fire to make sure that the next generation, the legacy is intact. So, you know what we call that on our side of the curve? We call that a bad bitch. And I mean that in the good way. Maybe he's just a badass witch. Okay. Misty Day. How could you not like Misty? I mean, come on. I would say one of the other good things that this show brought me is because, well, I'm going to admit this now. I was not a big Stevie Nicks fan before the show. I mean, I knew her. I listened to some of her. I grew up with some. My mother had a lot of weird taste in music. Well, not weird. My mother was very eclectic in her music taste. And it was all over the place. But yeah, Misty Day kind of brought me back into liking Stevie Nicks, which is worth it right there. I mean, come on. She's the down-to-earth, nurturing earth mother. I mean, who brings people back from dead? I mean, come on. And she was already really powerful to begin with. And she was detached from the coven and brought in unwillingly. And the whole falling for Madison's trick when Madison is, you know, oh, I have to eliminate my, you know, competition who may be supreme level. And I'm just going to, you know, knock you out and drop you in this coffin and have these people bury you and you're going to asphyxiate. And later on, you get found and brought back to life by, you know, Cordelia and Queenie. And when you walk up in the house and you molly whoop Madison, who deserved it three times over. I mean, that I'm pretty sure everybody saw the Tumblr gifts if you didn't see the show. That was a deserved beating right there. I mean, it definitely was. It was a very deserved beating. And I'm not one for, you know, but she deserved it. She deserved more. I like the rituals in the show because as a person who likes to write and loves the theory of magic and how it works and different rules, that's one of the things I was looking for. There were not enough of them in my book, but I liked the ones that they had, you know. They were also very visually pleasing and the aesthetics were cool. The costume and wardrobes were awesome, except for Queenie's. I wish they could have done more with Gabby's. They could have done so much better with Gabby's look, and I'm still a little upset about that, but the costumes were cool, and yes, it did push the witch feel. And I feel sorry for every actress in that show having to deal with New Orleans, wearing all black. Oh, the humidity can kill you. Stevie Nicks again, enough said. Anyway, dislike. And this is where we're going to get to my issues. The constant push for us to feel anything besides contempt and rage for La La Ree. I don't really need to go into this in depth. I'm pretty sure we all black people know this after watching this show, that, you know, the constant try to feel nice for her, try to see she may have changed, you know, have a little compassion for her. She was a woman of her time. Bullshit. I call bullshit on that. I call bullshit on that line of thought. And, you know, I used to be of that thought, you know, racism is, you know, some people are racist because of the time period that they lived in. And it was proven wrong because there are always people who in those time periods weren't racist, who went against the curve. There are always people who go against the curve of what is common thought of how things should be and instead think about how things could be, you know, instead of, you know, let's treat these people like animals instead of treating these people like human beings like us because they're just like us. The only thing that's different is, you know, our skin tone or, the religion. So no, that line of thought needs to be done. That line of thought needs to be done with. OK, don't excuse past racists. They are what they are. And especially ones who murder children and obviously were pretty much just serial killers, because that's really what she was, you know, and proved it in the last two episodes. Oh, not in the last two episodes. Yeah, it's because, you know. Marie Laveau being consigned to one of Papa Legba's hell. Nah. And on top of that, having to deal with Lala Ree for eternity. You know.
What?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what you know.
No, I have nothing.
No, I could tell you. It's fine. Marie had made a deal with Papa Legba for immortality. And she had to pay a yearly sum. Usually she had to do his bidding every year. And usually it was an innocent soul. And the problem is, in the episode before the last, first season finale, Lala Ree gets the upper hand on Marie and knocks her out. I don't know who takes enough Benadryl to knock your ass out. And frankly, as an immortal, maybe she should have had some immunity. That was some weak ass writing in my book, but we won't talk about that. She knocked out Marie and cut her to pieces and buried the pieces in separate places. Lala Ree actually was smart with that one, but she didn't get that idea herself. She kind of got the idea from Spalding's ghost.
Hold on, time out. Can we talk about the habit she has developed of disfiguring and maiming
black people? That was my serial killer part, because in the end she does kill them all. But yeah, and it was, there is no remorse. There's no remorse. Lala Ree has no remorse at all.
That is deeply twisted.
It is.
Sick and racist.
It's true to the person who she was in real life, which is the only thing about Lala Ree in the show that I actually was like, okay, at least they're staying consistent in that they kept her like she was in real life. Because that's, you know, Lala Ree was based off of Delphine Lala Ree, you know. And if you do any history, look up, the character in the show was just like how she was in real life. I don't know what her body count was, but yeah, she had an attic with, you know, a torture chamber. Her and her family tortured their slaves. And, you know, sometimes it was swept under the rug, but then, you know, it came out and they had to pay a fine. Didn't matter. They still got away. It's in the books. So as much as people try to say and get mad about Queenie betraying Lala Ree to Marie Laveau, I'm like, you guys need to read your history books and realize that this woman is based off of it's historical accuracy. In real life, this woman did this to our people. This woman tortured slaves and black people. And if you don't understand, how come we're not, we give no fucks, then I feel sorry for you.
And to try to make any part of that redeemable, or try to make the character, to soften the character or make it relatable or likable or anything like that, means you don't have any respect for people, or consider people of color human.
Now, I will say, and maybe that's one of the things that, I don't know if other people realize this, but in the end, They did not try. Lala Ree had this whole monologue with Queenie about, you know, how, you know, she sat there and watched all this stuff and she doesn't believe, you know, your world's a lie. You know, there's no way a black man could be present or equal to a white man. And this is, you know, the episode before the season finale. And pretty much Lala Ree admits that she hasn't changed, you know, that her cry, her tears was, you got to me, but you ain't changed anything. And, you know, blah, 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 yakety schmackety. Queenie realizing that, and Queenie already put in motion things, like Queenie had made a deal, talked to Papa Legba. And Legba is the one who told her that the fact is Lala Ree had dismantled Marie Laveau, and Marie Laveau is out of play pretty much. And Queenie kind of was like, well, if that's the case, how can I kill Lala Ree? She's like, you can't. And he's like, but if Marie's out of play, her immortality, she can't pay your fee, So therefore, her immortality's gone. So therefore, La La Ri's immortality is gone because La La Ri got her immortality from drinking Marie Laveau's tears. That was what was in the serum at the beginning of the series when you find out how La La Ri was made immortal. So La La Ri is now mortal, and Queenie kills her. And that's how La La Ri ends up in Papa Legba's hell.
So it's La La Ri that's in there, not Laveau.
Oh no, both of them are.
What?
Yeah, it's a linked hell. But Marie Laveau is her warden and has to torture La La Ri's daughter for all eternity in front of La La Ri.
Why can't she just torture La La Ri?
I don't know. I think it's more a pain to see her daughter being tortured, I guess. But it's not cool because, again, Marie's hell is being stuck with this racist person for eternity. And having to do something she doesn't want to do. She doesn't want to torture the daughter.
And why is she in hell?
Who? Which one?
Laveau.
Because she made a deal with Legba to sell her soul for immortality.
But how about how Papa Legba is not even a devil?
I know.
Anyway.
I know. That's later on. Don't worry. My list of things. I told you my list of things at this show.
All right. Sorry. I just needed to know what happened to Queenie and Laveau. And I need to know who the Supreme is.
Okay.
And then.
Okay. Okay. Queenie's fine. Queenie's alive. Well, kicking ass.
Good.
Awesome. Queenie is actually, at the end of the series, she is one of the council members now. Her and Zoe. They're the last two living from the current group of witches. And because of the stuff they've been through and because they're more powerful, Cordelia, Fiona's daughter, ends up being the Supreme.
Why?
Okay, so this is what happens. And this is going to get a little long-winded, but I'll do it. Cordelia, remember at one point she got blinded by acid.
Mm-hmm.
Myrtle gave her the eyes from the two people on the council who had betrayed her before grinding up their bodies and taking care of the rest of the remains. So Cordelia had sight again, but Cordelia lost the other sight, the more powerful sight.
Mm-hmm.
At the point where Nan's character got killed. Yeah, Nan's character got killed by Marie Laveau and Fiona as Marie's payment to Legba that year. And that was an interesting moment because Legba was like, I don't know, this. She's not innocent. And they're like, oh, she's pretty much innocent, except for, you know, she killed the neighbor next door. And they're like, oh, but she was a bitch. And the neighbor next door was really evil. That was the one who's raising her son to be very religious and had been feeding him, making him wash and bleach and maybe even drinking bleach. And she killed her son in the end. She had killed her husband when she walked in, her husband having sex with his secretary, and he was gonna leave her. And you know, he was like, I'm gonna take care of our child and everything, I'm leaving you. He was allergic to bees, and she had put bees in his car. Now when the witch hunter, which was Cordelia's husband, had tried to attack Nan, who was next door, which is where this woman lived and her son. Nan rescued, saved him. The mother got shot, and Misty brought the mother back. The son was in a coma, but Nan could still talk to him with her powers. And when they were in the hospital, he revealed to Nan that he has seen God, and God told him what happened with his father and his mother. And Nan told the mother this, and the mother lost her shit. And when the son came out of coma, she suffocated the son. And then she cremated the son. So they were back at the house, and Nan and Zoe went to visit. And, you know, it was a grief visit. The mom, you know, Nan knew that mom was evil, pretty much, and no good. And was like, so where's, I forget his name now, where's blah? And she's like, oh, he's here. And she pulls over an urn, and Nan loses her shit. And Nan's powers have grown. And pretty much Zoe's trying to grab Nan to take her out. And she throws Nan throws Zoe away with her new powers, which is she has concealing them. We'll talk about that too, which is the control power, how to she can control people. And so she's keeping Zoe away. At the same time, she makes the mother grab the bleach and drink it herself and repeats the words. She's like, "You must be cleansed," which is what the mother always said to the son before the bleach treatments. So Nan was a bit of a badass in the end. And Nan had also found the baby that Marie had stolen from a hospital. I don't know if you saw those Tumblr gifts. I'm pretty sure everybody did. Where the cops were coming, trying to get to her, and she pretty much made the cops shoot each other and said the line to the child about, you know, "Hush up before I give you something to cry about," which all black people know from their parents. That child was supposed to be the offering to Legba, because Legba always wants an innocent soul. Instead, Marie and Fiona offered up Nan.
That's wow.
Yeah. There was a lot of
backstabbing.
Yeah, and you know, Fiona definitely was the lead of the backstabber crew in this show. So I mean, Fiona's body count is pretty high. but yeah. So yeah, Papa Legba, I can't go into deep about just how disgusted I was with his appropriation and, you know, of Papa Legba. It's just, I love Lance Reddick, so it was that, but Murphy's interpretation of Legba was just, and I'm sure there are a whole lot of bunch of stupid folk thinking some good cocaine will try to summon him, so go ahead, have fun with that, you know, go ahead, because you can't summon Papa Legba that way. I don't think you really want to, but and the constant misogyny in the show, really. It was a lot of misogyny. I mean, the witch hunters were the prime example of misogyny. And, you know, witch hunters all, in my book, witch hunters are always a prime, are example of misogyny, you know, even in reality, because the fact is the Inquisition and just, you know, the real Salem witch trials. And it doesn't help that, you know, it's always been patriarchy and a male dominated thing to, you know, "Oh, look, the village, you know, the village's cunning woman," you know, no, it just, I didn't like it. It really, the episode that actually showed you how the witch hunters train and how Cordelia's husband was brought up and trained was just, yeah, super misogyny. And another one of Murphy's issues. So I really am starting to think Murphy has some serious issues with women, people of color. And he has a baby thing, because, again, we never know what happens to that one lone baby at the end of the show. And very similar to, well, we know what happens to the baby at the end of the first season of American Horror Story. Both of them, one ends up dead and in the house, and the other one, you know, is the devil. But anyway. I dislike both Madison, Fiona, and Spaulding for various reasons, and I'm not going to go deep into that right now because, well, Madison and Fiona definitely were cut from the same cloth, but the body counts on their sides were pretty high. Granted, someone came back to life, so, and you know, there's that Molly Whip moment, so, Molly Wop moment, so. The lack of understanding in regards to things magical. I mean, transmutation is not teleportation or apparate. Okay, I don't know why you felt the need to change the name on that. You could just call it teleportation. But you transmute things, you change them. You don't move from place to place. When you transmute things, it is what alchemists did. Prime example, lead to gold. Okay? Do you see the thing moving? No, it's not. It's not going from point A to point B. So, learn your magical terminology. Concilium, or mind control, which is what it is. Really, yeah, needed a name. It's something other than mind control. And usually pyrokinesis is usually just advanced telekinesis, because, you know, when you move things at a molecular level, they build up heat and they combust. So learning magic terms for your next time, maybe. your next show, seriously. But yeah, if you have problems with, again, rape, misogyny, molestation, I probably would stay clear of a lot of Ryan. Well, I would stay clear of American Horror Story in particular. I don't know if any other show had that with Murphy. I know Glee didn't, but Glee seems to be his happy show to some degree. I haven't watched Glee in a few seasons, so. Even with star power behind the show, I really only give it a 2 out of 5. And I'm disappointed. I'm very disappointed. I'm disappointed not only as, you know, a lover of thing of witches, but also as, you know, a fan of a good chunk of the cast who are all really good actresses. I mean, it's just, but no. Nah. So, yeah. And it had some weak white writing and some plot holes, but I'm used to that nowadays from shows.
I thought this show was going to be, you know, better about the women's stories, you know, and that it was going to be exploring kind of women's power and fighting against misogyny and all that kind of stuff. And it seemed like they were fighting each other more than they were fighting anything outside of them or any outside forces, which really sucks. Like, really, you had all these powerful actresses and playing powerful characters, and all you could do was show them having catfights?
Yeah. You know, you had, I mean, I had a write up and I trashed it because one of the things was, and I didn't really talk about the Fiona character. In some ways, I think the Fiona character and her whole aspect of she doesn't want to give up her power because when one supreme rises, the previous supreme falls. And Fiona, you know, Fiona was the hard partying, cocaine snorting, drinking. She was the party animal even at her advanced supremeness. And, you know, the show begins with her looking for not an immortality serum, but a way, you know, through science to find a way to stop her aging process, reverse it, and reverse her cancer, which you don't find out until second or third episode she has, or maybe. I think you may have known in the beginning. I don't know. But this is all compounded on the fact that the new Supreme is rising, so the old Supreme is losing her power and her vitality. I don't know if Murphy was trying to specifically point out the fact is that as people, and I would say with Murphy, it's a misogyny thing, so as women, he's looking and pointing fingers. So, well, you know, women will do anything to stay young and beautiful. And maybe that's just a jump for me in my mindset, but that's what I think he was trying to do with Fiona. Because frankly, I mean, this is a woman who, you know, cut another witch's throat, who she thought was the next Supreme. You know, and she actually killed the Supreme before her to gain her Supremehood. So, you know, she's shown as in that traditional, you know, that traditional mode of being the, you know, cutthroat, pardon me, I used this word because this is one of those times where I'm not using it in the positive. She's portrayed as, you know, a power hungry bitch. And it wasn't really, you know, like I said, it's just not, it's not what I wanted in the show either.
All right. So did Fiona try to kill Cordelia?
In the very end, no. In the very end, you know, we think they may. Fiona makes it look like that the Axeman had killed her own lover. She sets it up, and she's really in France. And when she comes out, she comes in at the very last of the final episode. Cordelia feels her in the house and they go to talk. Now, I also remind you, when Cordelia becomes Supreme, all her wounds are healed. So her eyes, she reblinded herself, by the way. I don't know if you know this. She reblinded herself after Nan's death when her and Queenie had a conversation. Queenie was like, oh, you're going to protect me? Whatever. It seems that your protection is weak because Nan was dead. I mean, you know, Queenie showed back up at Nan's funeral with Lala Rio on a leash. It was kind of hilarious. And she had healed Lala Ri. She had put her arm and her head back on the body without scars. So once again, like I said, Queenie became very powerful. And she had upchucked. She pulled the silver bullet that Cordelia's husband has shot into her when he shot up Marie's salon. The silver bullet didn't kill her. Yeah, so, and silver bullets will kill witches in this world for some reason. I don't know. They're blessed, actually, is what it is, too. But, yeah, so Cordelia reblinded herself and gained back the other sight. But the truth was that she didn't need to reblind herself to gain back the sight. Cordelia had blocks. She had that classic, you know, my mother lorded over me. My mother, not lorded over me, my mother was, you know, just me, nasty, and everything to me. So all my true abilities were buried. And as Merle said, it seemed that her abilities came out through the other witches, which is how Queenie had done the resurgence on Misty when they found her body. It was actually through Queenie that Cordelia's powers had came through, because Queenie couldn't resurrect Zoe. That was a little cute scene when they were doing the transmutation part of the Seven Wonders. You should, I don't know. Anyway.
Oh boy. So
I'm gonna need a while to wash the show out of my system, because like I said, I was expecting better. And one of the reasons I kept on watching is because, you know, well, you know, I expected better, but I definitely want to see how bad it was going to get, and it got bad, and it was pretty gross, and I'm going to need a cleansing myself. I'm going to need some sage. I'm going to need a lot of sage.
Okay.
Yeah, I may need to turn on the right, I may need to let my muse run wild with me and write some stuff, because, you know, it did give me some ideas. Actually, it didn't give me ideas, it just reinforced the idea that, you know, somebody can do it better.
That's what fic is for, fixing shows like this.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah. After that.
It definitely has to be better on the show.
So, yeah, I think we'll just end it here.
We need some high point. I need to end this on a high point. We need to stop ending our podcast on low points for us. We need to end this on a high point. So, let's wing something real fast, please.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of something good, and all I can think about is that, you know, okay. So yeah. So I'm watching DS9. I'm rewatching DS9. And I have to say, in a lot of ways, that is good, because I'm still hoping for a new show, a new Trek show. I really would love a new Trek show. Hinting, putting that out there in the universe, because I really hope there is one. But I would say one of the things I noticed about the old writing style is that the overall meta plots are really good still, And even when you have, you know, long seasons, 22 episodes, that if you stick to tight writing, a good writing group, you don't lose your focus. And I'm missing that about shows. So that's my high point for this, because that was real low. And yeah, okay.
Well, the high point is that it's over and you don't have to watch again if you don't want to, but you know.
I know. I may go watch season 2 because I haven't, just so I can see the trifecta of doom that is Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story, but I may not. We'll see.
Well, I'm going to keep not watching it and being a little bit happier.
Watch me. I'm just a masochist at times. I admit that. I'm such a masochist at times. I know. I put myself in situations where I shouldn't and get hurt. I really shouldn't watch certain shows, and you know, when they turn out bad, I just can't help. Hey, at least I stopped watching Supernatural at season 5. I just can't continue with that one.
Yeah, I beat you here, season 4 for me. I was done.
Hey, woo! I didn't even see season 1 and 2. Okay. I only watched it when it started getting into the Christian mythos part, which was pretty the only thing I really wanted from that show.
So, Alrighty, so there's our bright spot, and now we will end the show before it's 5 hours long.
Oh, God.
Our Tumblr is a-bleakoutlook.tumblr.com, facebook.com/bleakoutlook, Twitter is @ableakoutlook, and Gmail is bleakoutlookpodcast@gmail.com. So, all right, hope you find something to enjoy, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Have fun, guys.